evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 27, 2014. Church leaders in the country are calling for peace.
Well, we are concerned basically about the suffering of our people, of course, in South Sudan and, of course, the ongoing war in Sudan. We need to talk about that.
And gunmen in South Darfur reportedly killed 15 villagers who had fled violence and were heading back home.
It's a dramatic illustration that returning to villages that Darfuris had been driven out of earlier is still far from safe.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN mission in South Sudan says it has not agreed to allow UN aircraft to be used to transport officials from Riek Machar's opposition movement to an important conference in northern Jonglei State. UNMISS says in a statement released today that it received a request from the Office of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD's Special Envoy for South Sudan, to use a UN aircraft to carry opposition officials from Unity up an island in Jonglei State to the town of Pagak for a meeting. But two days after receiving the request from IGAD, UNMISS declined it. UNMISS spokesperson Joe Contreras says in a statement that the request was turned down for security and practical reasons and not for any other reasons. In August, an UNMISS helicopter was shot down near Bentiu in Unity State, killing three of the four Russian crew members on board. The United Nations says the helicopter was carrying cargo, but militia active in the area have accused the UN of carrying fighters from other sites in their aircraft and threatened to shoot down UN planes and helicopters. Some opposition officials are already in Pagak for talks, which are supposed to allow them to iron out issues that are barring them and the government from reaching a lasting peace deal at the IGAD-led talks in Ethiopia. The IGAD talks are expected to resume after both sides complete their consultative conferences. In today's statement, UNMISS reiterated its support for the IGAD-led peace process and said it will, quote, continue to strictly implement its mandate in an impartial manner. The UNMISS mandate was renewed this week by the UN Security Council. The Security Council said UNMISS will continue to focus on protecting civilians, monitoring and investigating human rights violations, facilitating humanitarian access, and supporting moves to implement the IGAD brokered cessation of hostility agreement signed in January. Anglican bishops in South Sudan are calling on the government and the rebels to end the nearly one-year-old conflict in the country. The bishop of Kejukeju Diocese, Anthony Pogo, says the majority of Christians in the country are urging church leaders to press warring parties to sign a peace deal. He says the church is very concerned about the continued suffering of the South Sudanese people because of the conflict.
As bishops, we looked at the ongoing involvement in the church on what how the treaty would look like in terms of our own preparation, in terms of ways of how we can alleviate the suffering of our people through poverty. We looked at ways in which the church can contribute towards that.
How about the political situation? They say the difference between politics and religion is very thin. How about the political situation in the country? Did the bishops talk about it?
Well, we are concerned basically about the suffering of our people, both in South Sudan and, of course, the ongoing war in Sudan. We did talk about that. As you know, that the faith groups have been having observer status, the ongoing talks in Addis, and so we were concerned. We wanted to hear, you know, from one of the representatives. One of our bishops has been one of the observers, and we wanted to hear from him firsthand, but also give our own input, because we are keen that the suffering of our people is brought to an end. And one of the things that we talked about was the need for the two sides to expeditiously sign peace agreement so that the suffering of our people is brought to an end.
Bishop Enoch Tombe is representing the faith-based groups in Addis Ababa. What did he tell the bishops about what is happening in Addis? Because the talks have been on and off, on and off. What did Bishop Tombe tell you?
Like all of us, I think he also shares with us as bishops our concern on the need to expedite the process. And, of course, as an observer, there is not much that he can do apart from urging the two sides to speed up the process. This is definitely the issue that we are all concerned. So our plea is to the two sides to look at the issues that are a stumbling block to a final settlement of the problems that have affected this country.
If the church is given an opportunity to resolve this conflict in South Sudan today, how would you go about resolving it?
Look at the root causes of what has been happening to this nation and what has contributed to what we've gone through. Negative ethnicity is definitely one of the issues, although there are root causes which definitely need to be looked into. And I think handling some of those issues would be crucial as a long-term solution to what has contributed to where we are now.
The Anglican congregation in South Sudan is one of the biggest, and I'm sure that Christians are speaking to you on a daily basis as being their leader. What do you hear from the people in South Sudan? What do they tell you?
Everybody is yearning for peace. We would like peace to be achieved in this nation, and many of our people will urge us that we urge our leaders to expedite the peace process. And so, yes, that is what we're hearing from the people. But again, as I said, long term, we need to look at some of the root causes to the issues that are there and not shy about solving them, and definitely find a long-term solution to these issues.
What is the impact of this conflict on the church activities in South Sudan?
All people in South Sudan, we are affected because some of our dioceses where people have been displaced either internally or they have been forced out of the country, it now means that these people have are away from their homes of origin. And this also includes some of our own church leaders, including bishops, have been displaced from their areas, which means that they can't carry on doing what they are doing.
Most of members of your church are asking you that they really need peace and they want you to talk to the leaders to bring an end to this conflict. Is the church reaching out to President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar with that message from your own people?
We have come up with an appeal, which is our communique, which definitely addresses that. That's one way we are doing that. But we also do, of course, a lot of consultations with our leaders, which is important. And as I said earlier, the South Sudan Council of Churches, other faith groups are also doing what they can to encourage the two sides to expedite the process for peace.
That is Bishop Anthony Pogo, the Bishop of Kajukeji Diocese, speaking to me from Juba. Anglican bishops just concluded a 4-day meeting to discuss issues affecting the church in the country. A member of parliament in South Sudan says money meant for overseas travel has disappeared. Paul Jumi says members of parliament in Juba want an answer on how 3 million South Sudanese pounds was used during the period of crisis in the country. He says the August House should explain how the funds allocated for lawmakers to travel was used.
Well, what happened is that we had money for that time we were going for campaign, you know, because of what happened on December 15th. So when all the members of parliament went to the constituency, so you see, we applied for money because that time the government launched a campaign also. And then they gave us money also that when we come back, we should also go to foreign trips and preach the same thing. So some members actually got a chance to travel abroad.
As a member of parliament, did you get some money to go to your constituency to preach peace?
Yeah, no, that one we got it, but there is another money for foreign trips. This is what they are complaining about, the one for foreign to go abroad. Not all people travel. So they're asking, what happened to the balance?
And how much was that money allocated for foreign trips?
It was 3 million Sudanese pounds.
Parliament is an oversight over the executive, and there are a lot of stories coming out of South Sudan that there are cases of corruption in the executive. Now, if the parliament is questioning the disappearance of money meant for their business, what does that mean to the common man on the street? Is there hope in the parliament?
That is the problem. You see, some people like to jump into talking things that are the right procedures. You know, because as members of parliament, we should be the least people actually to start complaining. We should be the one to follow the right procedures. So if there's something wrong, people should sit down and say what happened, how do you go about it?
You're a member of parliament. Is there any transparency in the system, whether it's the executive or the legislature?
Well, it's very difficult to say that, you know. It's very, very difficult to say, you know. But, of course, we in the parliament would like to be as transparent as possible, because that's our mandate. If we're not transparent, then the whole thing becomes useless.
And with this crisis going on, how is the work of the parliament being affected? I mean, we understand yesterday that the Upper Nile State Assembly just opened up after several months of no operation. How is the national parliament faring on with this crisis?
No, the national is actually doing fine because we are supposed to have gone for recess, but we have been told not to go for recess because of the negotiation going on. In case anything would come up, it's supposed to be the parliament to endorse it. That's why we are all hanging around. We are all due for recess. And we are not going to go. I think we are just going to go for Christmas and back. But the recess, we have been denied it because of this crisis now.
That's Paul Jumi, a former member of the Economic Committee in South Sudan's parliament. He was speaking to me from Juba earlier this past hour. 15 Sudanese villagers who had fled the deadly violence in Darfur were reportedly gunned down as they were heading back home to Hamada village on Tuesday. Eric Cohen, co-founder of the alliance called Act for Sudan, tells South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme he has seen multiple reports of internally displaced persons being shot dead in the Hamada region in recent weeks.
It's a dramatic illustration that returning to villages that Darfuris had been driven out of earlier is still far from safe. And it's also a dramatic illustration that the government of Sudan, which has created so much of this physical insecurity, is moving in the wrong direction, seeking to kick the UNAMID protective forces out of Darfur at the same time when they're needed more than ever. We've seen reports of escalating violence throughout the regions of Darfur, and it's scary to think that those levels of violence have returned to the levels that were the worst levels at the height of the genocide in 2003-2004. And with those kind of levels of violence, the government should be seeking by every method to be protecting the people rather than kicking UNAMID out and letting tribes run rampant.
If these people were simply villagers trying to return home, they were not in any way, shape, or form seeming to be any kind of militia group, why would they be gunned down like this?
The reports that I've heard are that this is attacks from tribes that did not want the people to be returning to their villages. And the people who they murdered were actually elders and imams from a nearby village who had gone to Hamada to pray and welcome IDPs home. And this is the welcome they've received from their neighboring tribes. This is, I think, if the reports can be confirmed, an example of the results of the government policy of resettling other tribes on the land and in the villages where Darfuris had been driven out of.
What can be done in these areas, which sound very remote, to try to protect these people who are trying to return home?
Darfur is a very large place, but we have to start building security for the people there and making efforts to disarm the Janjaweed and the government-aligned militias is a start, and having UNAMID playing an aggressive and active role in protecting wherever they can is a start. But without those beginnings, what we see is the degeneration of violence everywhere.
I understand that the governor of South Darfur State, Adam Mahmoud Jar al-Nabi, I believe that's how you pronounce it, declared an indefinite emergency situation in South Darfur State, including a curfew. Does that help any?
I don't think so. I think he's protecting his interests in the cities.
When you say protecting his interests, what do you mean?
The government's interests in maintaining control in the large cities and supporting the tribes. Remember that the Janjaweed are supplied both by money and arms and protection from the government. And this has left the pro-government aligned tribes awash in weapons and able to commit attacks such as these.
What about the special tribunals that are supposedly set up to investigate crimes? Are they doing anything?
The special tribunals are years old, and they are widely recognized as the joke that they are. There have been men of some integrity who have been assigned to lead those tribunals, and they subsequently quit in protest because they could accomplish nothing. They could not investigate or bring cases. It's the entire effort from the government in this area is a stalling tactic that only fools in the West would accept as being a sincere effort to bring justice for the perpetrators of such violence.
That's Eric Cohen, co-founder of Act for Sudan, an alliance of Sudanese and American activist organizations throughout the United States. He was speaking to us today from Boston. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a man who immigrated to the United States gives back to his native Sierra Leone on this day of Thanksgiving. That story is coming up when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what was your favorite subject in primary school?
My favorite subject in primary school was social studies. I like it because I wanted to be a journalist. And to be a journalist, you are supposed to know much about social issues.
My favorite subject was English, because when I was in primary, I liked mostly to speak English. I was admiring people when speaking English, so that's why I like it when I was in primary.
I liked Greek because it was easy for me to understand, and I could relate to a lot of the things, because my father is a farmer.
Mathematics in primary school, that was my favorite subject because at one point in time I wanted to become an accountant.
My favorite subject in primary school was social studies. I liked learning about past things that have happened and things that are currently happening in the country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The government and rebels missed this week's eager deadline to firm up details of a transitional government. But Information Minister Michael Makuei says he is still optimistic that peace will be reached in the next few weeks. I spoke to Mr. Makuei by phone earlier today from Juba.
Well, of course, we were supposed to go back upon a call from IGAD, from the mediation. And now the rebels did not fit to make their consultation, so I believe this is the cause of the delay. And if it is only after finishing their consultations that they will report to IGAD, and then IGAD will fix the time for the resumption of the talks.
Are we talking about a week, too?
Well, I don't know. The rebels seem to have not yet started their consultative meeting yet. So it depends on how long will it take them for UNMISS to transport all their commanders from the ground to the RV where they are supposed to meet, and it is thereafter that we will be in a position to know when will the meeting take place.
And why is the UN transporting the rebels? I mean, this sounds a little bit strange.
Well, of course, this was upon a request from the mediators to the government of South Sudan to allow UNMISS to transport the rebel leaders or the rebel commanders from their respective positions to PAGAK. Of course, in the government's quest for peace, We saw no reason why we should object to the transportation, but to accept, to give the green light so that these people are transported and they go and brainstorm and discuss their issues so that they go and decide. Because we are looking for peace.
Now, we understand also Juba had its own meeting where they briefed the civil society and government officials on what has been achieved in IGAD and what has not been achieved. But what is your stand when you're going back to IGAD? What are you going to tell IGAD?
Well, we are going to tell IGAD what the people of South Sudan told us. The conference which we had on the 25th was attended by over 1,000 people from all walks of life, all South Sudanese and all the states. The civil society, the state governors and the state assemblies and the civil society organizations, the traditional leaders, all the stakeholders attended this conference. And in this conference, we made a presentation. As the government delegation to the peace talks, we made a clear presentation and we gave them the areas of disagreement. And then we waited for their responses so that when we go back, we'll go with a clear position of the people of South Sudan. They deliberated and came out with four decisions on the outstanding issues. One, on the system of governance, they said, on the structure of the executive during the transitional period, it should be the president, the vice president, the prime minister, and three deputies to the prime minister, then the cabinet, then the ministers. This is the position taken by the conference against the position of the rebels, which was saying only the prime minister, only the president and the prime minister, no vice president, no deputies to the prime minister. Number two, the competencies, the powers of the prime minister and the president. It said all the powers of the president should maintain, continue as they are in accordance with the provisions of the Constitution. The president is an executive president, as came in the Constitution and as came in the 25th August protocol on the agreed principles, which was passed by the ICAD summit. The president continues to be the head of state of government, and that the prime minister, the powers which we had proposed for the prime minister, which are six in number, these six powers plus any other function or duty that may be delegated to him or her by the president, that makes them seven. These are the powers of the prime minister, who is a non-executive prime minister. The conference resolves that there shall be only one army. And it is only during the pre-transitional period, which is the 3 months before the beginning of the transitional period, that the prime minister shall be the CNC or the commander-in-chief of the SPLA forces in opposition. This is the period when those who will be reintegrated will be reintegrated, and those who will be demobilized will be demobilized and handed over to the TDR. This is resolution number three. Number four, the conference resolved that the federal system, yes, we accept it, we accept a federal system, but the National Constitutional Review Commission, which is now in the process of drafting the permanent constitution, should conduct studies and come up with the most appropriate federal system for South Sudan. These are the positions on which we are going to negotiate with the rebels. We are optimistic as the government, we are optimistic that we will reach peace.
That's South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makui speaking to me this past hour from Juba. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A large blast rocked the central district in the Afghan capital late today, followed by gunfire in an area that houses many embassies and foreigners' compounds. Journalists on the scene report intermittent gunfire and say the attack appears to be ongoing. There's no word on casualties in the latest attack, which followed a suicide car bombing earlier in the day. That attack killed at least five people in a vehicle from the British Embassy. The U.S. says it's horrified by reports the Syrian government killed scores of civilians during airstrikes on the main city held by the Islamic State group Raqqa. A monitoring group says at least 95 people were killed Tuesday, including at least 52 civilians. And finally, researchers say an experimental Ebola vaccine has caused no serious side effects and produced an immune response in all 20 healthy volunteers who received it in an early-stage clinical trial. The New England Journal of Medicine said yesterday that scientists will continue to follow the volunteers for another 48 weeks in the study that began on September 2nd. The aim of the trial is to determine the safety of the vaccine produced by British firm GlaxoSmithKline
Kenneth Klein. Ebola in West Africa has killed nearly 5,700 people out of some 16,000 cases. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Today is Thanksgiving Day in the United States, the day Americans give thanks for their blessings. Among them is Bobby Smith from Germantown in Maryland, who immigrated to the United States 25 years ago from Sierra Leone. 3 years ago, to give back, Smith began a small volunteer organization, Hope for Lives in Sierra Leone, to help the disadvantaged in his homeland, one of the poorest countries in the world. As we hear from VOA's Deborah Brock, he began by providing fishing boats and is now sending medical supplies to help combat Ebola, which continues to devastate Sierra Leone.
Bobby Smith is packing medical supplies in boxes for shipment to the main hospital in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Among the items are gowns, masks, and gloves to help protect health workers treating Ebola patients. Smith has also been sending rolling beds and wheelchairs since the hospital didn't have any. His mission has become personal since two of his relatives in Sierra Leone have died from Ebola.
My people are dying. I'm just trying to help as much as I can.
Smith knows what it's like to save lives since he works on a surgical team at a Maryland hospital's trauma unit. Many of the items he ships home are donated by hospitals, including partial rolls of medical tape.
They use just a little bit of it. They don't want to reuse it, so they're just going to dump it.
Smith is being helped by volunteers at a Fairfax, Virginia warehouse belonging to the Brothers Brother Foundation, a U.S. charity that provides medical supplies to needy countries. Luke Hingson, president of the group, calls Smith inspirational.
He sees a problem and works to bring the best out of other people to solve the problem.
During the past 3 years, Smith has also jump-started other projects. Some fishermen in Sierra Leone didn't have boats, so using his own money plus donations, he bought 3 boats for them to share. His former primary school didn't have a library, so he helped build one and filled it with books. And when Smith sent over 4,000 pairs of donated shoes, he saw the eyes of school children light up.
It's like Christmas for them.
He has also handed out meals for homeless amputees living together in camps who lost their limbs during Sierra Leone's brutal 11-year-long civil war that ended in 2002. He met them at a beach where they were having fun in their otherwise difficult lives.
Because after the civil war, they got thousands of amputees without homes. Every Sunday, they have a group that comes in and plays soccer.
Smith says his organization is also helping the homeless make money.
We send tools for them to make a living because they can make pots and pans.
Smith says his efforts show that small projects can have big results, improving and saving lives.
You don't need a lot of money to help people overseas.
Hope for Lives in Sierra Leone is continuing to send medical supplies. Once the threat of Ebola has ended in Sierra Leone, the group plans to send a team of health workers from the U.S. to perform surgeries for free. Deborah Block, VOA News, Fairfax, Virginia.
And that report by Deborah brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Mawazo by Tanzanian musician Diamond. Ningekuwa na uwezo ningekunywa tapombe nikupoze mawazo. Maana mimi mchana kutota usiku silali mapenzi yangu kikwazo. Ningekuwa na uwezo ningekunywa tapombe nikupoze mawazo. Maana mimi mchana kutota usiku silali mapenzi yangu kikwazo. Sikujua mapenzi bara tena ni maradhi ya moyo pendaga. Tena mapenzi kara yanajenga chuki na chuyo kwenye kaba. Mtu wangu na thamani ina maana kweli ya kunijua. Chakurutani, ya mapenzi yangu wakasimua. Mtu wangu na thamani, ina maana kweli ya kuvijua. Uguni chakurutani, tani, akamua kutimua. Ningekuwa na uwezo, ningekunywa tapombe, nipunguze mawazo. Maana mchana kutwa ta usiku silale, mapenzi yangu kikwazo. Ningekuwa na uwezo, ningekunywa tapombe, nipunguze mawazo. Maana mchana kutwa ta usiku silale, mapenzi yangu kikwazo. We have been listening to Diamond with that song, Mawazo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
nikaingia kwenye somo penzi langu ameleta tafarani na umi.